It's the final week of the 90-day regular session. Will lawmakers be able to get their work done by Sunday, or will they have to stay in Juneau? What's happening with the various ideas for shoring up the state's budget without depleting the savings accounts and creating a worsening fiscal situation for the future? There are various plans for tapping the permanent fund earnings and discussions about new taxes. So where are we? We're continuing our budget discussion today on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly.
Alaska Public Media is seeking donations for our 2016 Big Alaska Statewide TV Travel Auction to be held on May 19th and 20th. We're looking for trips, accommodations, activities, and adventures. Your generous donation will help us in our commitment to growth and excellence in programming on Alaska Public Media. There's more information online on our events page on our website at alaskapublic.org.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, welcome to Talk of Alaska. Last week we heard from Governor Bill Walker and Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott about what they're hoping to see from lawmakers yet this session regarding how to stabilize the budget for the future. The governor says there must be a plan in place this year. A partial fix, he says, doesn't work and risks emptying out the permanent fund in coming years. This week, the plan was to have state lawmakers on Talk of Alaska to give their perspectives on the big conflicts and how they hope to overcome them. But guess what? They're really busy. And those who had agreed to come on today have now declined. So we are going to continue the budget discussion, and we have someone who is well-versed in the economics of the state's finances. To help us understand what the current proposals may do to close the budget shortfall is Gunnar Knapp. Gunnar is an economist and is the director of the University of Alaska Anchorage Institute of Social and Economic Research, or ICER. Hi, Gunnar.
Hi.
Thanks so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
So before we discuss the current legislation aimed at fiscal solvency, tell us about the talks you've been giving for several months now regarding the state's budget woes. You've presented four options. Where have you been and what have you brought forward?
What I've been doing for actually the past year and more is going around the state talking to lots of different groups and simply trying to explain the basic facts of the situation and the options that we have. I'm not trying to advocate for or against any of these options, but just help people understand the situation we're facing. Because until you understand certain basic facts, it's sort of hard to understand why the legislature's looking at the things they're looking at. And to sum it up very briefly, the basic problem that people need to understand is that because of the fall in oil prices and also declining oil production and also increasing costs of oil production, our oil revenues have fallen drastically. And whereas just a few years ago we were getting $5, $6, $7 billion in oil revenue every year, this year we're projected to get less than $1 billion. And because of this, we just have this huge gap in our revenues, because oil used to pay for 90% of state government.
Mm-hmm.
And we've lost all this oil money. And so now there's this huge deficit between what we're spending this year, which is about $5.2 billion, and the revenues that we're bringing in, which is only about $1.3 billion. So the question, and that is just not sustainable. We've been paying for this huge deficit by drawing down some savings accounts, which have been drawn down very, very rapidly. And so the problem is that the amount of money that has evaporated is so large that there isn't any easy fix.
Mm-hmm.
And we're facing very unpleasant options. And those options are either some combination of cutting spending, raising new kinds of taxes, or for the first time using earnings of the permanent fund either by reducing what we pay out to Alaskans as dividends or by reducing how much we save in the permanent fund. And one part of those options that's gotten a lot of attention has become very controversial here in the last part of the session. When you talk about cutting spending or increasing revenues, one way you could cut spending would be to reduce the oil tax credits that we're paying out to encourage oil exploration, and or another way would be to increase taxes on the oil industry, and that has become very, very controversial because some people feel that we should do both of those things. In fact, the governor had a proposal to do that, and many legislators feel very, very strongly against that, and the oil industries argued against that. So we face all these. None of these options are easy, and every one of them is extremely unpopular with some significant segment of Alaskans. And so the legislature is facing a really, really tough challenge in figuring out what to do.
And they only have a few days left if they're going to try to get their work done in the 90-day regular session. They can go to 120 days if they so choose. And, of course, the governor or the lawmakers themselves could call themselves into special session. We are continuing our discussion on Talk of Alaska on the state budget and the problems that we have with this big fiscal gap. My guest today is Gunnar Knapp. Gunnar is an economist and the head of the ICER Institute for Social and Economic Research at University of Alaska, Anchorage. You can join our conversation, too, if you'd like, if you have ideas. And you'd like to discuss them and have us discuss them with you, you can call statewide at 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. If you're calling in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can email us talk@alaskapublic.org. We already have some callers on the line, so let's get somebody in the mix here, Gunnar, and talk with us before I ask some more questions. We're going to go to Michael, who is in Anchorage. Hi, Michael. Did you have a question?
Hi. Yes, actually, I do. I'm the chair of United for Liberty, and we put out an extensive 96-page recommendation to the legislature, and I carried it down there. And in there, it showed that they could cut $1.5 billion from the budget without even capping the permanent fund or incorporating any income tax. And I have two questions. One is are any of the panelists aware of that budget request? And the second thing is, are they also aware that there's a substantial gap between the PCNs and full-time equivalents and what we fund in the state of Alaska, that there's about $250 million in slush funds in disparity to the personnel that we actually have and the ones that we fund?
All right, Michael, our panel of one. Yes, okay. I can tell that he's deep in thought here. Gunnar, have you, I'm looking at your email too, Michael. Okay. This is a group of volunteer citizens of United for Liberty, and this is their budget plan to cut $1.5 billion from the existing state budget without affecting essential services and without capping the permanent fund. Are you aware of this plan at all, Gunnar?
No, Michael, I'm actually not. I haven't seen that particular plan, and so I'm very pleased if you could email it to me, and I'll like to learn what you've proposed. With regard to cutting $1.5 billion from the budget, I think that the problem with any kind of budget cut is that every part of the budget has some constituent group out there that feels that that part of the spending is really necessary, and they tend to turn out anytime the legislature proposes to cut something and put a lot of pressure on the legislature and argue why they think it's a bad idea. And so we've had a situation for a number of years where, in fact, the legislature has said cutting spending's our biggest priority. At least the majority has said that, and that's where we need to start, and that's what we need to do. But when you get to this stage in the session and you look at how much has actually been cut, as you're well aware, it's far less than $1.5 billion. And so I think part of the political fix that we're in is obviously your group feels strongly, and certainly many Alaskans do, that we need much larger cuts than we've seen. But politically, that's proven hard to achieve.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for the call, Michael. I want to go back to what we were discussing right before Michael called in regarding the talks that you've been giving for about mm-hmm. a year. Have you seen a shift from a year ago when you started this in the attitudes of people that you're talking to about their recognition of where the state is? Has that changed? Are people looking at it more in terms of, wow, we really are in a mess and we have to do something and I'm supportive of X, Y, and Z? Or what's changed in the conversation?
Well, yes, certainly over the past year and a half, I've seen a change in the people that I've been talking to, in that they tend to be much more aware of and much more concerned about the fiscal situation that we're facing, in part because actually our fiscal situation is considerably worse than it was a year and a half ago because oil prices have fallen.
Right. But hovering around $40 a barrel right now.
On the other hand, I'd be the first to say that the groups I've been talking to are not necessarily representative of the Alaska public. I mean, the people who think that a fun way to spend your afternoon or lunch or evening is to come out and hear economists talk about the state's finances, that's probably not, your average Alaskan probably has a lot of other things that keep them busy. I think probably the kinds of groups I've talked to are just because they're actually listening to something like that, tend to be more aware of the situation. I do think that as a state, part of our political problem in solving this is that we face some really tough choices that are not very popular. And so the only reason anybody would sort of put up with the state doing any of these tough choices is if they understand that they're really needed, that we sort of have to do difficult things. And then if people aren't actually aware of the situation, then they're going to say, why would you think of such a thing that I so detest? To really solve this, I think that we're going to have to get to a stage where most Alaskans understand what a difficult fix we're in as a result of the loss of so much oil money.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to get to the news of the week, and I think that James, we have more callers on the line, and James is in Eagle River and wants to talk about PFD earnings, and this probably will get us into the news of what lawmakers are grappling with right now today. The governor has a plan for the permanent fund restructuring. Senator Liesl McGuire has a plan. And Senator Anna McKinnon, who is the co-chair of Senate Finance, is working on some kind of a hybrid proposal, trying to kind of mesh these together. James, did you have a question about PFD earnings this morning?
Yes. I should know this, and I'm a little embarrassed that I don't, but after the PFD is paid out, how much is left of the permanent fund earnings?
That's actually a pretty straightforward answer. Mm-hmm. The answer is about half. And the reason is that we have a formula that we've been using for 30-plus years to calculate what we pay out as dividends. And the formula is basically half of the average realized earnings over the past 5 years. So it's not exactly—so, like, say, last year the permanent fund earned something. Well, your dividend wasn't, the dividend payout wasn't exactly half of that. Rather, it was half of what the average earnings have been over the past 5 years. And that's intended to smooth out the pretty wide variation in the earnings from year to year. So the answer is, on average, we've been paying out half the earnings and saving half the earnings by keeping them in the permanent fund. So the I guess how much is left? Half of the earnings are left after you pay out the dividends.
Mm-hmm. I understand that. What would that amount to in a dollar amount?
Well, in recent years, say over the past 5 to 10 years, the realized earnings of the permanent fund have varied from between about $2 billion to $3.5 billion. It's varied quite a bit. As a real rough rule of thumb, you might think of the permanent fund as it's $50 billion. It generates about 5% return on income, and so that's about $2.5 billion a year on average, which would mean that on average, you're looking at about an ability to generate, if we stuck with the current formula, about $1.2, $1.3 billion for dividends and $1.2, $1.3 billion left over. So that's the amount of money that we're talking about, roughly, that the permanent fund is capable of generating.
And that would be if the permanent fund stayed the way it's structured now. The governor would like to essentially plow earnings from oil money and from other savings accounts into the principal of the permanent fund, and then try to generate enough to fund, I think, $3.3 billion per year for government services. Is that about right?
That's correct. There are several different proposals that the legislature has been reviewing, and perhaps another hybrid proposal will be developed. What's different about the governor's proposal is that he's proposed a kind of beefed up permanent fund, because he would take the oil revenues that we're getting and put those in the permanent fund too, as kind of a sort of holding tank for all the money that we're getting. The logic the administration has suggested is that if you did that, then you could, the oil revenues and the investment revenues vary from year to year. But if you sort of put them all in this fund, then you could have a steady payout. And I think the governor's used the phrase that you could put the legislature on an allowance and stabilize things that way. The other proposals that, for example, Senator McGuire has a proposal, Representative Hawker, their proposals are a little simpler in that they're proposing to keep the permanent fund the way it is, but change the payout rule so that instead of having a payout for dividends, there would be a payout to government out of the earnings. And like I say, the potential payout, on average, at the current size, the permanent fund, you can start with a figure of is capable of generating around $2.5 billion.
And thank you very much for the call, James. We're going to go back to the phones here in just a moment. But the proposal that Senator McGuire has is would take a percentage on a yearly basis, is that correct, of the market value of the fund at that time?
That's right. There is, if you look around the world, there's lots of large funds that are endowment funds and that are, some organization has this money and hopes to, sort of have a steady stream of investment earnings. And the most common approach that these funds use in determining what payout is a so-called percent of market value, or POMV approach. Mm-hmm. And what they do is they say, well, let's look at what the total value of your endowment is, and then we'll pay out a standard percentage. And what the most common figure that's proposed in Senator McGuire's proposal is that you'd pay out 5%. And they sort of feel in some years the fund would earn more than that, and some years it would earn less. But if you pay out this amount, you can do so and maintain the value of the fund. Now, that is different from the current payout rule that we have, which isn't a percent of market value. It's based on the earnings from year to year. Like I was just saying, you look at how much it's actually earned, and then you take an average.
Averaged over 5 years, correct?
That's averaged over 5 years. But nevertheless, it can vary quite a bit. And
sure.
Certainly, we've seen a lot of variation in our dividends over time. And if there had been a percent of market value formula, it would have been less variation.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and we are continuing our discussion about the state's budget plight today. Lawmakers are in their final week of the regular session, and there's still a lot of debate and struggle going on with trying to reconcile various plans. You can join our conversation statewide at 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. If you're in Anchorage, the number is 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Here's a question from someone who says, why are we not talking about a sales tax anymore? This is an email question. I know it's been voted down in the past, but that was before this crisis. It seems that it would be more fair than imposing a tax on only those that are working and the employers and only those that own property. There isn't a statewide sales tax. But I know that in rural Alaska, a lot of communities have their own sales tax. So if you have a 5% sales tax in a small community and then the state imposes a 3% sales tax, then suddenly you've got an 8% sales tax. Have you heard lately of anyone pushing this idea again?
Well, I'm not aware of anybody in the legislature proposing a sales tax. But certainly, I've heard lots of Alaskans talk about a sales tax. If you look at other states around the country and how do they raise money, probably an equal number have income taxes as have sales taxes, or maybe a few more have income taxes. A lot of states have both. So certainly, a statewide sales tax is something that a lot of states have, not all by any means, but a lot. In Alaska, there are two significant practical issues with a sales tax. One issue is that the sales tax has traditionally been a means by which some, but not all, local governments have raised revenues. So if you added in a statewide sales tax or a state sales tax, then what you'd have is you'd have some places that already have a pretty high sales tax now having an extremely high sales tax, and other places like Anchorage, where we don't have a sales tax, having a much smaller tax. And so it could create a real problem for those places that already have a high sales tax. Another problem, which is probably no other state shares the way we have it, is that there are some extreme cost differences between different parts of the state. So, for example, if I go to the store in Anchorage and I buy a gallon of milk, I might be paying half or maybe even a third of what somebody in Barrow or Point Lay or something is paying for a gallon of milk. And so suppose there was just a standard sales tax around the state. Well, is it fair that the person in Queefluck has to pay three times as much sales tax on buying a gallon of milk as I do? And I mean, you can debate that, but I think it's those two practical issues have kind of kept sales taxes from being sort of talked about as much as income taxes as an alternative tax mechanism. Although it's certainly true that if you look at polling results, I think more Alaskans indicate, if you just sort of look at what the average Alaskan thinks, for example, people who responded to the Rasmussen poll, if I remember correctly, more people said that they'd be, you know, willing to, if it had to come to some kind of tax, I think more people were in favor of a sales tax than an income tax for the reason that the caller suggested.
Except it would have a much larger burden on rural Alaska and rural Alaska communities where there is less economic opportunity, and to add another layer of sales tax on would be a significant burden for some of those communities that already have a sales tax. So I think that it's important to keep that in mind in that conversation. Let's, about what taxes seem fair and appropriate for Alaska. Let's go back to the phones. Tom is in Anchorage and has a comment about the budget game. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Thank you very much. Good morning, Gunnar. I was an attendant at the Alaska Forum Environment this winter and was a participant in your budget game. And I proposed four different revenue streams to enhance the state budget here. I proposed raising a corporate income tax, a personal income tax, a seasonal sales tax that exempted food, clothes, and medical necessity. And I also recommended issuing the permanent fund dividend in its present form, but on a debit card that could only be used with a vendor who had a corporate sales, a corporate income tax number and a sales tax number to recirculate the permanent fund dividend throughout the economy several times to raise taxes and increase the state economy as a diversified source of funding for Alaska businesses and residents.
Okay.
With the main intent of deferring much of our tax burden on non-residents. And I was wondering, at that time, your game did not provide for a raise of the income tax, of the corporate income tax. I was wondering if you could discuss whether you have removed that bias from your game so that we could see what raising the corporate income tax would do. And if you could discuss how we could best put some of this burden of our tax structure on non-residents and how the permanent fund affects Alaska businesses and recycling through our economy as a diversified source.
Okay, Tom, thanks. You've given quite a bit of fodder for Gunnar to take on here. We're going to have to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get Gunnar's response to Tom's ideas about changes to the budget game.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Alaska's Tobacco Quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their home. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco. And it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins lead to disease and increased medical costs. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We are continuing our statewide conversation on the budget. And our guest today is Gunnar Knapp. He is the director of the Institute of Social and Economic Research, ICER, at the University of Alaska Anchorage. Gunnar, do you want to take on some of what we just heard in this last caller's comment about the permanent fund restructure and other ideas?
Well, sure. Tom suggested four different ideas for sort of new ways the state could collect taxes, and I think that what we really ideally ought to be having in the state is a discussion that looks very, very broadly at options such as those that Tom has raised, and says, you know, how might this work? What would be the effects? How much money could we get? What would it cost to implement? How practical is it? And we really ought to be having a conversation about all these things, and so that we, so that for as we do move forward with new new kinds of taxes. We know that we've really thought through the different options and including some of these more innovative ideas that Tom has suggested. The way that happens is that it's really the legislature that has to, you know, or the administration that has to take any idea and get it to a stage where it gets discussed and hearings are held and so on. That's what really matters. And so you know, if people have ideas like this, then the challenge and the sort of the real way the political world works is you've got to get enough people suggesting this idea that a legislature picks it up and or the governor and so on. Right. As far as the caller asked about a game that I've developed to sort of try to illustrate the state's budget situation, and he was concerned that my game didn't include some of these tax options, and the simple fact is, if my game included all the options that are potentially available to us, it wouldn't be practical. It'd be such a complicated game. Nobody would.
It'd be Monopoly.
It would be some of these other horribly complicated games my family inflicts on me that I can no longer understand.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Rich is in Sitka. Hi, Rich. Did you have some questions or ideas?
Yeah. Well, I lived in Minnesota during the Iron Range bust. And there it seemed that the only solution was to go into a depression because Minnesota was already a high-tax state, and so there was not much headroom to increase taxes. And there was nothing like the permanent fund. I've been through it here in 76 when we went kind of through a recession. Right now, it looks like the legislature's problem is it has too many options. It's got the permanent fund. It's got other savings accounts. It's a low-tax state, so it can afford to raise taxes without being completely devastating competitively with other states. Is the problem that they're paralyzed because they have too many choices, and so instead they spend time talking about daylight savings time, or is it that they really don't have choices and I'm completely misreading this?
You know, I think that's it's a really interesting question that you raised. The fact is that we do actually have a lot of options. I mean, we have a problem, we have a big problem, and the problem is we're spending way more money than we're taking in. But we actually have a lot of options for addressing it. There's a variety of new taxes we could have. We could reduce dividend payments. We could obviously cut spending. I think the problem we have is that all these choices are very, very unpopular with Alaskans. What tends to happen is, so I think you're right in a certain sense, all of us who look at one particular choice and say, gosh, I hate that choice, instead of saying, well, but it's our only choice, so we have to do it, we tend to say is, don't do that, do this other choice. And then the people that don't like that choice say, no, don't do this, do this other choice. So it does tend to paralyze us. If we only had one option, then it would be easier for us to say, well, I guess we have to do that. Then if you have three or four options and everybody starts arguing that whatever you do, don't do the thing I hate, but do something else.
Right. And that does illustrate an interesting point in this whole debate is that there are several different ways that lawmakers could approach this and finding the path of least resistance to a combination of them seems difficult. The House has postponed votes twice on the governor's oil tax plan. The governor would have reduced subsidies for small producers, increased taxes. Modifications were made, and now the legislation would save about $270 million as opposed to the governor's plan for $800 million. So there's a lot of iterations out there. The House and Senate are both hoping to pull together votes today on both the oil tax plan, whatever iteration comes together, and also the permanent fund restructuring. So there is movement afoot to try to get some of these things voted on. We'll see by the end of today what happens. Let's go back to the phones again. Tori, I think, I hope I'm saying that correctly, is in Petersburg. Hi.
Yeah, hi. My name's Tori, yeah. I just had one comment, I guess, in your last thing. And on the oil credits, and I think like all, I don't know, we're having a budget crisis, and all industries in Alaska should be self-supporting at this point, and so I think getting rid of the tax credits to begin with makes sense, at least in my mind. But I was actually mainly calling because I'm a proponent of state income tax, and I just had an idea. I know it's kind of the legislature's winding down and coming to a close here, trying to finalize things and not really come up with the new ideas, but I don't know. I'm a commercial fisherman from Petersburg, and I see a lot of money made in this state, and then it just leaves without ever contributing. So I have friends that make, you know, significant money in the state, and then they just head south and spend that money south, and the entire time they're here, they're on a boat. So I feel like the Alaska never gets a chunk of that money, and I think if we did a system where we do a state income tax and then do a state tax credit for Alaskans that qualify for the tax credit, and in order to qualify for it, maybe you could just, if you qualify for the PFD, you also qualify for this tax credit. And so, I don't know exactly the numbers, but let's say the first $10,000 you make in the state, you know, you get a tax credit on that money. You don't actually have to pay taxes.
Interesting.
And anyway, it's just an idea, but I think, you know, we're, a lot of money is leaving the state that's never taxed, never, you know, it doesn't contribute to Alaska at all. It's just a drain. So we should take advantage of that money, but at the same time, not penalize Alaskans that live here and actually contribute. So you give them a tax credit, you know, it's $10,000 maybe, so, you know, per person, let's say, just for an example.
Right. There, you know, this is in line with an email comment that we had. Richard wrote in saying, thank you to ICER for clear and rigorous analysis of options that face Alaska. But he says, a blend of spending cuts, modest use of savings, and new revenue is needed. Of new revenue sources, impacts from income tax seem far fairer to more Alaskans than a state sales tax. He says, I don't understand why so many legislators are stubbornly resistant to imposing a modest income tax. Can you help me understand why painful and economically damaging spending cuts seem preferable to a modest income tax to so many legislators? That's kind of a philosophical question. And it follows with what Tor is saying about why not an income tax. What have you heard from lawmakers who are hoping to push that very idea yet this session?
Well, let me first respond to Tor's comments briefly. Income taxes are highly controversial everywhere they're discussed. There are some people who hate them, other people who think that they're fair and the best way to go. But one thing that is undeniable about an income tax, and by the way, this would also hold true for a sales tax, is that part of the tax money you could you would collect would be from non-residents. And in the case of an income tax, it would be non-residents who work in Alaska, be it in commercial fishing or on the North Slope or whatever. And that amount might be about 10% or maybe a little bit less of the money that would be collected by an income tax would come from non-residents. So that could be an argument. You might say, well, if we did that, we'd be getting these people that are from outside Alaska who work here to, you know, contribute something. With regard to the second part of Tor's comment, it would be, you know, I'm sure what we'd all like is the tax we could have that would be just on non-residents, so we didn't have to pay. But in fact, it's very difficult to structure the kinds of credits or other things that that he was suggesting that would say you could have a tax that really the, you know, Alaskans wouldn't end up paying. One way we try to do this is with seasonal sales taxes in some places. You know, when you got at the time of year when you have a lot of non-residents here, then you stick in a sales tax and you don't hit people with it at other times of the year. But it's hard under the you know, constitution and laws of our country to come up with things that discriminate against residents of other states. With regard to, you know, a lot of people think, well, to them an income tax seems blindingly obvious and fair and the way to go and so on. But there, nevertheless, if you look at polling results, such as the Rasmussen Foundation's polling results, it typically tends to rank near the bottom of what the, you know, sort of the average, you know, what a lot, you know, the, you know, Alaskans as a whole are willing to go along with. A lot of people, You know, some people say, well, fair is the rich pay more. Other people say, well, fair is everybody pays. And so you get into different perceptions of fairness.
Right. And, you know, I don't think anyone likes the idea of increased taxes, but I think there's also a growing recognition based on polling, recent polling by Rasmussen and others, that says people are more cognizant of the fact that we really are in trouble financially in the state, and oil prices are not going to jump back up anytime soon by any estimates. Part of a big part of how an economy works is consumer confidence, and so that people feel like they want to spend money and they're going to invest in new cars and building a new home and things like that. On the line with us right now is Jonathan King. Jonathan is an economist with Northern Economics, and his organization has a consumer confidence index that they have been doing since 2010. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, Lori.
Thanks for joining us. I appreciate that you had a chance to come on this morning. And tell us a little bit about your statewide consumer confidence index and what the numbers are have shown you from the time you started in 2010 to currently.
Well, we've been running a quarterly survey of Alaska households, and we actually call it the Alaska Confidence Index. It turns out that there's a group out there that has trademarked the term Consumer Confidence Index. So we try to avoid that, but we call it the Alaska Confidence Index. And we contract out to have 750 Alaska households surveyed every quarter, and ask them six questions. We ask them, how do you feel about your local economy? How do you feel about the Alaska economy? And how do you feel about your personal finances? And then we take those three questions and we kind of give them a little twist. And we say, okay, do you think each of those items, is it getting better or getting worse in your opinion? And we started this really at the end of the last recession that Alaska had, because we realized that we didn't have a picture of the consumer in Alaska. And as the Alaska economy has matured and in some ways become a lot more like the lower 48 economy, the service sector and the consumer have become a bigger and bigger portion of the overall economy. So, you know, we go out and we ask these questions, and then we put them on a 0 to 100 scale, kind of like a speedometer on a car. And we think of anything as over 50 as being, you know, generally positive, and then under 50 is we would think of as kind of negative territory or contractionary territory. And as of as we just got the data the other day, for the first time ever, the entire index is below 50. It's at 49.4, which is down substantially from the, you know, over 60, almost 62 reading that we had back in September 2014. So we kind of watched confidence kind of come up out of the last recession, where we were in the low to mid 50s, and now, you know, we've seen really six consecutive quarters of that confidence really eroding away. And where we're seeing the biggest erosion is not yet at the personal financial security level, although people's expectations for that in the future have moderated, they're still somewhat positive. But really where we're seeing it is an erosion in the confidence of the Alaskan economy as a whole, and then their local economy.
And so what does that mean? How does that translate into, is there a way to look at it through dollars spent? How much people are spending in their personal income in the economy when the numbers are in the 60s, as opposed to when they're at 49?
Well, that's a great question. I think, you know, people are more willing to spend. And one of the things that we hear, you know, as we talk with people in the economy, is that they are seeing some consumer pullback at certain spots. We started hearing that really last October, November, that they were seeing people spending a little less money. And I also think that we're seeing it in the nonprofit sector as well. You know, last week it was announced that the Click Give numbers were slightly smaller this year than they were last year, although I was surprised that the overall giving was down only about 8 to 10%. So people were still reaching out, but we're hearing that you know, the giving is down a little bit, and people are a little more conservative about how they're spending into the economy. And, of course, if you get too much of that, you can end up with a self-induced recession where just people's natural tendency to pull back in a time of uncertainty can trigger a recession.
All right. Gunnar, did you want to follow up on that at all? Thank you so much, Jonathan, for calling in and letting us know about the Alaska Consumer Confidence Index that Northern Economics undertakes. Fascinating to know about those numbers, even though they're not very cheerful, but not surprising at this point in time. Gunnar, did you want to follow up? And then we're going to go back to the phones. Thanks again, Jonathan, for the call.
Thanks
for having me. Enjoying the conversation.
All right. Thank you.
Just very briefly to follow up, it's hard to pin down what drives confidence and how it affects the economy. But one thing that affects confidence is how certain or uncertain people are about what's ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And at the moment, certainly a lot of people are uncertain about things like, well, some people are uncertain about, am I going to have a job?
Right.
Because they're potentially going to be cut from a government job, or maybe their organization depends on some kind of government spending. And so they're
or
uncertain.
Oil field support service.
Right. Right.
Organizations.
And then other people are – but what I'm saying is, I guess the point I want to make is uncertainty is aggravated by uncertainty over where this fiscal thing's going.
Mm-hmm.
People – you know, the legislators – nobody knows what's going to happen this week in the legislature, or maybe in a special session, or maybe over the next 3 or 4 years. And this makes people – also uncertain and maybe less confident that rather than if we just sort of fixed the problem and did whatever difficult thing we're going to do, then people would say, now I know what's ahead and now we can build from here.
Sure, and react accordingly.
Yeah.
And then it would be interesting to see what that index number might look like if there was a plan in place and people could understand, okay, here's the pathway mm-hmm. forward.
So this is a problem with not – with this is what happens if you kick the can down the road.
Mm-hmm.
You get people more and more concerned about where's this going.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go back to the phone. Sue is in Nome and has a comment about income taxes. Hi, Sue.
Hi. Yeah, thank you. Actually, you've covered it pretty well. I really liked what the fellow from Petersburg had to say. But, yeah, I feel that it is simply the responsible thing to do, the sort of the grown-up thing to do, to look at an income tax. I don't mind considering restructuring of the PFD, but to focus on the PFD proportionally hurts the poor more than it does the wealthy. And rural Alaska, We're barely hanging on as it is. And I speak more for others than I do for myself. I'm very big into self-sufficiency and self-reliance and whatever. But I just want to say that the permanent fund was for a rainy day, and it might be raining in Anchorage now, but it's been pouring out here. And I feel like whatever decisions are finally made will have a tremendous impact on the sustainability of rural Alaska, because we are paying considerably higher prices for things right now. And I just support an income tax. It seems the most equitable way to distribute the pain of needing to grow up and change and bring in more money to the state.
All right. Well, thank you, Sue, for those comments about the prospect of an income tax for folks in rural Alaska. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll get more calls on and talk more with Gunnar Knapp of ICER as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
At Alaska Pacific University, you will be inspired by the beauty of Alaska, motivated by devoted faculty, and surrounded by independent-minded, creative students pursuing their higher education goals. There's no time like the present to find out what they are all about. It's time to experience APU. #ThisIsOurClassroom. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
The weeks are counting down until the first salmon return home to Alaska rivers and streams. Alaska's people live lives that are deeply connected to salmon. Alaska's economy and families are fueled by these relationships. Learn more about Alaska's salmon at salmonlife.org. This message sponsored by the Salmon Project.
All right, welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're in the final 10 minutes of our program. We have a lot of calls stacked up on the line, lots of email coming in. There's a tremendous amount of interest in how the state will find its way out of this current situation with our fiscal gap. Sue in Nome brought up the idea of how an income tax affects rural Alaska compared to urban Alaska. There has been a proposal, Gunnar, to tax the permanent fund at 35%. Is that sort of kind of getting at an income tax through a different method? And would it be cheaper to institute something like that that would just take a percentage of the PFD rather than trying to ramp up an income tax division?
I read about that proposal in the paper, but I haven't seen the full details. I don't quite understand it. It seems to me that I don't get the difference. Why would you hand out a dividend and then tax it as opposed to just pay out a smaller dividend?
Mm-hmm.
And I would be concerned, for example, if you pay out a dividend, then you have to pay a federal income tax on that dividend. And so why would you hand out a dividend that people have to pay taxes on and then tax it? So I guess I just don't understand it. I'm sure the sponsor has other ideas in mind that I haven't quite picked up on.
All right. Dixie is in Juneau and has a comment about the permanent fund dividend. Hi, Dixie.
Hi there, and I've been listening to these inputs and have a couple of other comments. I think that the whole idea of surveys and polls that Consumer Index caller, I think they are not reliable at all. To have 700 people as respondents coming up with perspective that's considered reliable. The New Yorker magazine had an article about that a while back and totally dismissed polls because of the landlines being very limited and cell phones being all over the place but often not responded to. And so I just wanted to make a comment about that one caller. And I think there is a simple solution. I think that the permanent fund ought to be just left alone and that a graduated income tax starting at 15% would be a solution. And I heard recently a quote from Governor Hammond saying that he regretted that the income tax was eliminated. And I think I've thought for a long time and it was a big mistake because politically everybody in the legislature worries about what their constituents would do to them if they instituted an income tax. And so I was really happy when Representative Paul Seaton was brave enough to support the renewal of the income tax. And I agree with the woman in Nome that's the most fair thing. It's a simple solution to the problem. And
okay.
Cuts aren't the solution. I'm 82 years old, and I depend on the permanent fund dividend to help cover medical services and oil costs. And I'm not in the bush. I'm here in Juneau and a single woman, 82 years old, so going to be 83 in August. And I just, it really
it's angers me
that the majority caucus is just cutting left and right. And
okay, thank you, Dixie. We need to move on. Thank you. We need to move on now. We've got only a few minutes left. I'd like Gunnar to get in here. Let's take one last call before, Gunnar, I ask you to sort of wrap up. We did have an email question about what is the best option, and we'll let you kind of weigh in on that if you so choose to. But first, Dave is in Cordova and has a comment about megaprojects. Dave, can you make your comment very quickly, please?
Oh, how cruel. Well, I called in late, so. Yeah, I'm curious, in light of the inability or unwillingness of the legislature to cut back on the big projects, which essentially favor private companies, whom I call the usual suspects, who are always the first to head for the fund after they subsist off our state treasury and promoted. That really disturbs me, for one. The same guys are always there to jump on it. And one other question they had was, this 50% people aren't employed in Alaska or refuse to work, whatever. It seems like something for Mitt Romney's 47%. And I'm wondering what the number is. You know, I'm sure most people want to work. But anyway, thank you very much for the program.
All right. Thank you, Dave. Gunnar, I'm not sure how you want to respond to this idea that 50% of Alaskans don't work. I don't know if ICER's looked at employment figures in that regard. But we did have also a question about what is the best solution available to lawmakers right now in session. What would you lay out as what you're seeing as some of the best options in the final minute that we have here?
Because I direct a research institute that it really needs to give objective advice, I try to avoid interjecting
sure.
my own opinions
of
about political issues like this. I think that the best answer, is not a technical answer that an economist like me can give. It's a political answer. For example, and you know, it relates to things like, is it more fair to have an income tax, which the higher income people pay, or is it more fair to have a dividend that everybody pays? And different people answer that differently. That said, I will offer this much of my opinion. If I look at the scale of the problem we face, and I look at the essential options of cutting spending, having a tax like an income tax, and reducing dividends, I don't think it's a choice of which one. I think that to solve the problem, we actually are going to need to do some mix of all three. I think that it would be really difficult to fix our problem just by cutting spending and having a tax and leaving dividends alone, or by just cutting dividends and not having a tax and cutting spending. I think that we're going to... My instinct is we need some combination of all
three.
We need
a combination. All right. Thank you to Gunnar Knapp, head of the Institute for Social and Economic Research. Thanks to Dave Waldron and Eric Bork, our engineers, and Josh Edge on phones. I'm Lori Townsend. Thanks for joining us today for Talk of Alaska.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by
the Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence,
and by
Alaska Pipeline Service Company, fueling philanthropic programs dedicated to creating educational and professional opportunities for Alaska Native people.
Alaska Public Media is seeking donations for our 2016 Big Alaska Statewide TV Travel Auction to be held on May 19th and 20th. We're looking for trips, accommodations, activities, and adventures. Your generous donation will help us in our commitment to growth and excellence in programming on Alaska Public Media. There's more information online on our events page on our website at alaskapublic.org.
This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.